Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Indianapolis Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM. As it's been the last few weeks with Voss starting his new restaurant, we're joined by Matt Ruff. You know him as @KidRock20 on Twitter/X. Matt, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken.
All right. Great to have you on again. Appreciate you doing what you do. Ravens have a number of moves. They've re-signed some people, largely from their own group, a couple from outside the organization, or one anyway. And then they have other players who have left the organization. We're going to go over that today. And then we'll finish with a couple of moves we'd still like to see from each of us. Ravens have had a busy early part of free agency, wouldn't you agree, relative to what they normally do?
Yeah, tons of action. I think it's been super exciting, but I think they're doing exactly what they need to do. I think EDC has the team in a good spot, so happy to see what they've done so far.
Yeah, and obviously the Ronnie Stanley was the biggest part of this. We've already talked about him on last week's show, so we're just going to talk about the moves that happened since last week. And let's start with a really unexpected one, the re-signing of Ben Cleveland. We believe the deal to be for 1 year and near the vet minimum. I have not seen that officially yet from any source I really trust. There may be some guaranteed money in the deal. That's always a possibility when you're bringing a player to camp. He doesn't want to just have a camp tryout. He wants to have some guarantee in there if he has to move on. But you know, given the circumstances, the long-term Harbaugh doghousing of Ben Cleveland, and then furthermore, the recent DUI, are you surprised at this signing?
Very surprised, although I'm actually pleasantly surprised. So I think that going back to the draft when Cleveland was taken, I think it was in the third round, I believe he was one of Harbaugh's starred players, right? So he was someone that John wanted. You would think he'd be able to get on the field quickly. Obviously, he has enormous size, and you think he'd be able to plug in right at guard. Was pretty surprised to see he could never really get on the field for more than just a little stint here and there. And, you know, ultimately it seemed like his career as a Raven ended with a whimper. But then with all of the offseason shenanigans that happened, it seemed like he was having a hard time getting on a team. And the Ravens said, hey, you know, we still like this guy. We think he's got a lot to work on. I wonder if we could bring him back on a really cheap contract and have him back up just about every spot on the line, probably aside from left tackle. I don't know how comfortable I'd be with him at left tackle, but I do think you could plug him in just about anywhere. And if you can get him at the vet minimum, we lost a lot of depth. I think it's a great signing, and I'm really happy to have him back.
Yeah, I'm happy as well. Very disappointed, obviously, in the DUI and kind of the trajectory his career has taken. But it's a weird turn, twist of fate that he's the Ravens' most versatile lineman now. It was Patrick McCary. He's gone. And the other guys they have behind them, they don't know who they're going to draft, and that'll be two of the roster positions, I believe, will be taken by draftees. But I don't see Samak as a particularly versatile player. He's certainly not a guard inside-outside guy. He might be a guy who could see some time at guard. And then, you know, you have – could Voorhees play another position if they brought in a new draft pick to be the starting left guard? It's possible, but I think Cleveland is the guy who gives you that most versatility, especially after spending time at center and right tackle, the center during the regular season, actually, and right tackle during the preseason. I think he does it. So interesting thing, good chance for a nice redemption story from him. And I still kind of think the move is a stopgap to allow development of the draft picks. Voorhees, I don't have really the same hope that Samak is going to be a player, but he might be. And if so, you give him another year to develop with Cleveland there. And I think Ben's future with the Ravens is still very much up in the air after 2025.
Yeah, the way I see it is it appears that Cleveland's going to be going through some big life changes with his marriage. And obviously he had the issue with some of the drinking. I'd like to see him take this as, I've got a second chance now. So I've been with the organization. I know the scheme. I know the coaches. I know what I've needed to do. Maybe I haven't taken it as seriously as I should have in the offseason, but now maybe I don't have as many distractions. And I know that in order to stay on the straight and narrow path, I've got to be in the gym. I've got to be studying film, and I've got to really be making this my career, my life, instead of doing it as something that you're kind of maybe half-assed doing. Not accusing him of that, right? But maybe he could step up his game, his study, his conditioning. And I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I've seen a lot of guys go through this in life where a couple life circumstances really nudge them either to the better or for the worse, right? So you can go either which way. But if you make it for the better, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in camp as someone who's really putting on a clinic, right? And is knows where to be, is fit, in shape, and is coming to John Harbaugh and saying, I'm ready, right? And maybe that doesn't mean week one he's playing, but you know how quickly injuries can happen. And I think that if he puts himself in the right circumstance, he can really use this as the linchpin to getting a lot of money and a good job after it. Probably not with the Ravens, but this time is as good as any for Ben.
That's true. And, you know, a year where he's sitting on the bench and plays 50 snaps or whatever, and I forget how many he played this year, but it wasn't many. I mean, his total number of snaps was small. I might have it in here somewhere in my notes. Anyway, not many snaps total played this last year. Most of them as OL6, a few at center, a few at guard, but you know, not a guy who is seen a lot of time. If that were to happen to him again, I don't think there's a big contract out there waiting for him. I'm not even sure if there's a small contract, but the Ravens have so many coaching tentacles out in other teams, there probably is somebody who would take a chance on him. You know, that if a lot of people know you, probably somebody likes you, is you know, one possibility in this league. Let's move on. Tylan Wallace, a 1 year, $2.1 million contract. Now, you and I talked about Tylan before as being a guy that we were afraid, I think in both cases, would get a better offer than something just slightly above the vet min. I look at this contract, I'm like, this is an Anthony Levine level contract, something you give to a quality special teams player that you want to be a special teams leader.
Yeah, I thought that this was, you know, I was afraid he was going to get between four and a half a year or so. So a 1 year, $2.1 million deal with $420K guaranteed. I was very shocked. He's turning 26 in May. Was very happy to have him back at that price. I think he adds a lot to the team, you know, doing the dirty work behind the scenes, the run blocking, special teams play. I think it's good to have people who have been on the team and with the coaching staff for a longer period of time, as opposed to always turning over the roster. It's good to have people who have been there and can teach the young guys what to do. I think Wallace had a great year receiving. We've talked about how some of the punt returning, I think, was fairly sorry from the Ravens as a whole this year. But, you know, to get him back on a deal like that, I think is a fantastic move. And, you know, frankly, I was wrong. I thought the market would be a little bit higher for him, and it appears it wasn't. So I'm hoping that maybe a little bit of his financial loss is the Ravens team gain. And, you know, all you need is one unsung hero to make a play or two in some of these games where we've lost in very close fashion. And, you know, he did make a big play on that last drive to make a difference. So I'm happy he's back, and, you know, want to see what he can do going forward.
Of course, a huge play against the Rams as well to win the game on the punt return in 23. But there's a few things about this that are surprising. The first is that Wallace and his agent really didn't seem to want to drag this out and go for an after-the-draft position. So he kind of felt like it was more important to get a pre-draft slot. That's interesting. He's a guy who brings the Ravens broad value, by far the Ravens' best run blocker among their wide receivers, does a very good job of keeping his feet in level two, positioning off, sealing off a guy. And he's not Miles Boykin's size. So he's got to do this more with feistiness, you know, to basically maintain that. And the Ravens have a bigger receiver in DeAndre Hopkins, who's been a kind of a lackadaisical run blocker the last few years. He is a guy that I'm really hoping the Ravens turn around, but it might be some leadership by example from a player like Wallace, who obviously is not competing with Hopkins directly for receiving snaps in the same way, will make Hopkins pick up his own game. And I think in general, the coaches are not going to let Hopkins get away with it, but I hope that is a positive impact that Tylan Wallace has on the rest of the receiving corps.
Yeah, I mean, Ken, I remember hearing a story, maybe it was at the beginning of this year, this past year, where Tylan Wallace sat in his car waiting for all of the final cuts to be made, really, really hoping that he made the roster, and he made the roster, and he was so relieved. And part of me wonders, does he really just love this team and see a future if he can continue to be that special teams guy, the glue guy, where maybe he's on this team for another 3 or 4 years, maybe it's a series of 1 year deals, but and as opposed to going to a terrible team and then being out of the league right away, maybe he sees this as a good ticket to keep moving forward.
Yeah, it's the survivor method, the Anthony Levine method, Albert McClellan, whatever. What was surprising about the contract that was signed is that they gave 100% of the qualified veteran money to Patrick Ricard to sign him. And I thought they would give a contract to each. In fact, I was of the impression that you had the same contract you could give twice, but you couldn't. They've apparently either changed it or it was always this way, and I just was ignorant of it. You have a certain amount of total qualified veteran money you can use in a given year. Wallace is on track. He's got a deal this year where he made over the minimum by about, I think about $700,000 is the total. That's all void money, effectively, that's added at the end of his contract. But it could be that if Ricard is not with the team in 2026, and I guess it's still to be hoped that he will be, that he could slide into some of that qualified money, because he'll be one of the few guys that has been here for the amount of time necessary to get that. So good possibility. Does a lot of things for the Ravens, and I don't want to minimize what he does as a receiver here, because he had 16.1 yards per target, which is the highest ever for a Raven if you define the snaps properly. It's 1 year from Sammy Watkins where he had a good number, but Wallace is it was at a ridiculously successful receiving year and very limited opportunities. And I think he's a guy who brings fresh legs to this offense. It's a nice deep receiving core. I think guys 1 through 5 and potentially a draft pick will all see some playing time. You've got another wide receiver in Tez Walker who should make the special teams unit and should play some. And then you've got the big three. I think the more fresh legs you have, whenever you have long drives, those cornerbacks start to huff and puff, and the new receivers come on the field and they go, what the hell, you know, kind of thing.
So, especially when they're coming in to block, right? They come in, you're a little tired, and then now they're coming to try to push you down the field, right? You don't want to see that coming at you.
There you go. All right. So we're both real happy with the Wallace sign, it sounds like. The third one is an interesting one under the radar, I think, with a lot of Ravens fans, but Jake Hummel, a special teams ace, signed as UFA. He's an inside linebacker. That contract, by the way, very unlikely to qualify for the comp formula, but I guess it could. Maybe it's one that gets offset by the Deontay Johnson signing, if that were to ever occur. Hasn't yet. So it looks like Deontay Johnson is headed for the bargain bin in terms of when people will pick him up. Oh, I think you're on mute.
Sure. Don't know much about Jake Hummel.
I can hear you now. I'm sorry.
I'm backhand. Oh, sorry about that. Having some thunderstorms blowing through the region here, so it might be giving us a little bit of trouble here. But don't know too much about Jake Hummel. Been trying to do some research on him. I do like the fact that we're getting younger than the Malik Harrison, Chris Board piece. Would like to see him be able to step in and really provide value on special teams. You know, I trust the Ravens to scout these special teams players. So this is one of those instances where if EDC and Ozzy and John have watched the film on him, and obviously their whole other team of scouts that are doing the scouting, then I'm excited to see him come in and see what he can do. I wonder, is there any room for him to come and play on defense in any sort of role? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think, first of all, I think that's the hard part about putting together a special teams unit. It's not like getting the guys who are on the street who can cover kicks, because there's a lot of those guys. There's a lot of guys, those guys who do it for their living effectively. But the hard part is finding the guys who can contribute on offense or defense. Hummel played 78 defensive snaps last year. 51 of those came in week 18 as the Rams were resting some players for the postseason. I think he immediately comes in and competes for the special teams leadership with Wallace and Kane. And yeah, the Ravens lost Harrison and Boyd. That's 800 special team snaps out the door. They have to find a way to replace those, and they have to replace them with guys who might be able to give you something else in a pinch. One of the big winner from this, from the inside linebacker departures, I mean, obviously the Ravens will draft an inside linebacker, and they might even draft two, or they might have one they draft and one they UDFA. But the big winner, I think, is Christian Welch. He might have another chance in Baltimore to basically be a four-unit special teams guy and also be a backup inside linebacker.
Yeah, but I would agree with that, Ken. He seems to always find his way back. Again, he's one of those players that knows the system. John knows him, trusts him. So, you know, while, you know, some people might hear Christian Welch and say, well, I'm just not feeling that thrilled right now, I don't think you're always looking for the world's most thrilling move. You know, sometimes you just need people who are going to be where they're supposed to be. And, you know, Christian Welch is that guy. You know, do I want to see him starting at Mike for, you know, a game against the Steelers? Not really, you know, but I think he can provide value at the back end of the roster.
Yeah. And that's all this is about. You know, you're signing a couple of guys for $2.5 million total. Who in Welch and Hummel, I'm saying, who are replacing two guys who make almost $10 million this year. It's a right player, right place situation. I Harrison was a interesting player. He could give you backups at a couple of different positions. I'm actually very intrigued by the combination of Harrison and Queen being on the field at the same time for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Absolutely love it. That's a couple of guys who have a lot of trouble tackling. And that could be, you know, quite a great weakness. So nice to see that. All right. Let's talk about Cooper Rush. So he finally came in, signed his contract, I think yesterday, maybe the day before. He'll be 32 in November. Now, there's a guy who has been around the National Football League hiding in the shadows for a long time. But I think 2017 was his first year in the league. So he's in his ninth season. He's never played for anybody but the Cowboys, though the Cowboys at one point cut him and he went to the Giants briefly.
Yeah, I think that from all of the various analysts that I've followed, I think people think that Cooper Rush is a very solid backup. I think that's all we need. We didn't break the bank on him. I think it was about $3.1 million a year for 2 years. He has been successful with the Cowboys. Not that, you know, it's all on him. You know, he's limited as a passer. His arm isn't that strong. He certainly fumbles the ball. And, you know, he's not going to go out there and win you a lot of games. I do feel like if Lamar went down for a period of four games, I do feel like he could get you to 2-2, which is about all you could ask for. Certainly not the best athlete, right? He's really the opposite of Lamar from an athletic perspective. But I'm okay with that because I've only seen one Lamar in my lifetime watching football. Now, I haven't been watching football, you know, for as long as a lot of other people have, but I think actually trying to replace Lamar is a fool's errand. There is no other Lamar. Yeah. So, you know, we need someone who can just duct tape the boat while Lamar's out for a few games, or, you know, maybe has COVID for a game or something to that effect. And I think Cooper Rush can do that. And he's proven to be able to win in his time on the Cowboys. So I'm happy with the move. And I think that they got him for a loan off contract, that it's not too intrusive.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way. I thought the Josh Johnson alternative was not a particularly good one. Speaking to his athleticism, there's two numbers that really stick out. 2.96 RAS, 2.96.
That's like me and you, Ken.
Yeah, that's about right. I don't remember what his 40 was, but it wasn't impressive. It might have been slightly under 5 seconds, or it might have been slightly over. The second number that really sticks out, maybe there's three I'll go with, is 0.4 yards per attempt on 58 career rushes. Now, admittedly, some of those are effectively sacks for plus one or plus 2 yards where he got run down. But that's a terrible number. And so what it means is the Ravens will have to totally re-engineer the offense if he's in there. You know, the read option is out of your lineup. You could do play action instead, but you can't do a read option. And then the third thing, one thing he does give you is pretty decent pocket awareness. Gets rid of the ball very quickly, has an internal clock that seems to work pretty well, and only a 4.05% sack rate in 2024. Arm strength, you mentioned. That's, you know, if Jackson misses a playoff game, the Ravens are probably done for. If Jackson were to miss, you know, 2 to 4 games inside a season, you could still have hope. And I think we only need to look back to the 2022 finish for the Ravens and having Tyler Huntley in that game in Cincinnati as seeing that how it will not work out against good teams, certainly more than once in a playoff scenario.
Ken, where were you on Josh Johnson? I was really shocked they brought him back last year. Yeah. Love the guy, love the man. I think he really does have a lot of value from his time in the league. I think he was very wise, and I thought he brought a lot to the room. But I really just thought from a football perspective that he was past the ability to be in the league by a year or two, and I was surprised they brought him back last year.
Very, very surprising. But you know what? You can play this a couple of different ways. You can get a guy who might be able to manage you through a game. And I think Josh Johnson might be that guy. Circumstances have to be right. You have to be playing a pretty bad team. Your defense has to basically take care of business. Your offense otherwise needs to not be completely neutered by the fact that Josh Johnson is on the field. And I think he might give you that. And the ultimate objective you're going with when you have Josh Johnson is you're going cheap. So you're getting him at absolutely the vet minimum. You're not paying him anything more than that. And he's there to basically save you salary cap because the season is lost if Lamar is lost anyway. So I think that you're approaching it from that angle. But after 21, 22, and 23, when Lamar didn't finish any of those seasons, 2021, 22, didn't finish any of those seasons. He just missed the end of the playoff game at Buffalo where Tyler Huntley came in. But then Tyler Huntley came in each of 21 and 22. 21, he actually managed to lose them a playoff that they had almost guaranteed at 8-3. They were with smoke and mirrors leading the entire AFC at that point. And then they lost 6 straight games. And then in 22, he got them to the playoffs. And Huntley actually had a key win versus Atlanta, a managed win down the stretch, but then was unable to get it done in Cincinnati. Valiant effort, but he just was not good enough. And he really was a substantial reason why they lost that game.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't go with a rookie draft pick here. Didn't like the Leary pick last year. I know you didn't like it either. I haven't heard anyone explain what they saw that made that pick worth it, aside from having some of the coaches go through a bunch of players and look at him. I didn't think they were going to spend $3.1 million on a backup, but I agree with you, Ken. I think that this is a fairly solid signing. I think he could get us through just a little bit of an injury or sickness or something like that. So I'm happy he's on the team, and I think they did good scouting here.
All right. Let's move on to some of the other stuff. There were no additional players lost to UFA this week, so they still stand at 5 gone. Arthur Mollett was cut before the start of the league year for $2.2 million in cap savings, completely expected. So not a surprise by any way. The one move that a lot of people were pearl clutching over was the Mark Andrews roster bonus, because he had $11 million in cap savings if they cut him. By paying the roster bonus, that goes down to $7 million. Effectively means that the Ravens are going to go for 2025 with Mark Andrews on the roster. I guess circumstances could change, and the offer in terms of draft compensation could be improved based on where they are. So they could still trade Mark Andrews, but I mean, I think in a lot of ways the ship has sailed. And I think also while he is if you look at the two players, nobody likes me talking about the possibility that likely will be traded, but they have a bunch of stacked contracts and they might have to do it. The difference between trading likely and Andrews is a much easier piece of asset to trade on draft day. And the reason is that he's going to linger into the value of him is probably somewhere around the fourth round, maybe a third round under some circumstances. But basically, by then, other teams will know if they've missed out on their targeted tight end in the first, second, or third round. Isaiah Likely, much harder to trade
because the only new information that will occur prior to draft night is who, sorry, prior to the time you might be traded, is who's drafted in about the top 35 to 45 picks. And there might be one tight end. There might be no tight ends drafted during that time. So it won't change a whole bunch of teams' impression of where they are in terms of their ability to get their tight end, their guy. And I'm unfortunate. Unfortunately, I don't really believe the Ravens are going to get the proper value for Likely either. If they did decide they had to trade him, which means they're stuck in a really bad situation where they can't draft a tight end themselves. They can't really draft a tight end because it'd be the fourth and they'd have to cut somebody probably or carry a fourth tight end, which is, not a good idea. And then they have every single one of these contracts comes due a year from now.
I agree with you, Ken. I think the only saving grace is the fact that if you let Mark play out this year and he does well, he could probably get you a comp pick in the offseason next year. And then you have the ability to franchise tag Isaiah Likely so that he doesn't leave you. So I think that I wasn't really considering the Isaiah Likely franchise tag, but you know, you had a really good episode on you know, unwinding some of these stacked tight end contracts. I think that that is the way to not have to have all of your tight ends leave in one season. Get a little value for Andrews in the sense of you get a lot of value with him playing this year. Then he gets a comp pick for you. Even if it's something like a fifth round comp pick, it's probably not going to be too high, maybe a sixth. But you at least don't have all of your tight ends leave at the same time. I think Charlie Kohler is a nice player. I don't think you can pay third tight ends on the roster. I just think there's way too many needs. We're already doing void years till, you know, till kingdom come at this point. So, you know, I think that that Likely franchise tag is probably what you're going to have to do and get a comp pick for Andrews at this point.
Well, you know, I like the notion of comp picks. Everybody knows I love comp picks, but the one thing about them is opposed to trading a player, there's a 2-year delay on getting a comp pick. And so if you're going to trade, say if the player you really want is available in say the third round and you're willing to trade a second from next year to get that guy, maybe early in the third round, maybe midway in the third round, then you've got to look very seriously at 2-year deferrals on draft picks and say, is this something we can do? Now, the Ravens have been good, and they always know that they need to keep a steady flow with this. They've always had good enough draft picks that they've had players who are generating comp picks for them. But it's a big difference between having a trade now. And occasionally, you know, you draft so well that you get lots of comp picks. Then sometimes you have to draft so well like they did in 2018. You have to unravel the draft anyway. You don't have enough money to pay everybody. Letting them all go in comp picks will just result in wasted picks because you can only get four. And so you have to trade players like Orlando Brown and Kenny Young and Hayden Hurst to unwind that draft before it all comes due. And I'm afraid that's where they are in terms of the 2022 draft right now. So we'll see. And we'll, you know, it's not as severe as 2018. Don't get me wrong. But they have, you know, with Linderbaum and Likely and Hamilton and others, they have a deep draft from 22 that they're going to have to pay up on. And they just Travis Jones, you know, it's not going to work out. They're not going to be able to keep everyone. You're better off trading this guy probably for a pick now than having him play the season, I think. Now, you can make the argument that's not the case, but probably my view is that they're probably better off just making the trade if they can on either player. And I'd rather trade Andrews. Of course, I'm much higher on Likely's future than I am on Andrews, but there's a big difference in value there. And they've I think there's every indication they've really already tried to peddle Andrews.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Ken. I think that Likely is certainly the bigger trade chip. Off the cuff, if I'm trying to think of what's the lowest I would accept for Likely or Andrews right now, right? Just to play the game, I think Likely would be a low second round pick is probably the lowest I'm willing to go. And Andrews is probably a middle of the fourth round is probably the lowest I'm willing to go. Maybe bottom of the fourth round, but it doesn't feel very good to me. What about you, Ken?
Well, I would have definitely said bottom of the fourth round would have been okay if they could have gotten out of the whole $11 million. Now there's value on the table, and the Ravens are going to lose however you do it. They've already paid the roster bonus. I'd want to get actually higher, and yet that's probably unrealistic. But there is another team that's looking at that and saying, okay, well, not only do we have to pay $7 million for Andrews, he's worth a slightly more draft compensation. So I'd want more. Would I do it for a high four? I'm not sure. I'd try and maybe go to Lamar and say, hey, how about we get you extended? If we can do that, we can keep both these tight ends. You know, if you can get Lamar involved in the decision like that, I think it's a good one. There was talk of that happening in terms of a visit being made to Lamar by EDC. So we'll see how that works out. In terms of likely, mid to high second is what I would want for Isaiah Likely. It's kind of about what they got for Orlando Brown. Seems about reasonable to me. You're talking a left tackle versus a tight end, and both impact the passing game. I could see it. I think that the next team that gets Isaiah Likely gets some value out of being able to franchise him and the leverage in terms of signing a contract. So if you've got 60, 70 million in cap space and you want Likely to be one of your cornerstone players, you don't have to sign him right away. You have the franchise tag to use as leverage in those discussions and allow the thing to play out. So I think he really has a lot of value to a team that has more cap space than the Ravens. All right, let's go on and look at a couple more players. Let's go through the outstanding UFAs, and I've got a percentage chance on each of these players returning. Nelson Aguilar, I'm at 5%. What would you say is his chance to return to the Ravens?
I'd say very low. Agree with your percentage. I don't know if I want to use a roster spot on Nelson. Mm-hmm. I think that's more the big thing. I do think that there is some value in mid-season. Someone gets hurt, you need him to come in, right? I think Aguilar has value. I'm not trying to just, you know, dump on the guy. But I also just, I want to get a young player in there. I want to see what they can do. And if in, you know, 3, 4, 5 games, you're like, wow, this just isn't working. Maybe you IR the young wide receiver, bring in someone like Aguilar. But I don't want to go in with him being the, you know, the fifth option on the books here.
Okay, I'm with you too. I think they need a draft pick for that sixth wide receiver spot. I wouldn't want to compromise on that. I want to get younger. But I do think Aguilar would be a good practice squad inclusion if it could be done. I'm not sure it can be. And he could be a good guy to have on speed dial in midseason too. Deonte Hardy, percentage chance to return.
Pretty close to zero. Was very odd at the end of the year. Seemed like we really could have used him, and he couldn't get his mind right or something around
that's
playing.
What was said, yeah.
That's pretty damning, Ken. I mean, you know, if you're working with someone and you're saying, hey, they can't even get their mind right to do the job, I mean, that's probably about as damning a statement as you could make about a coworker. So,
Deontay, I'm with you entirely. Deontay Johnson, percentage chance to return?
I hope zero. It has to be zero.
I hope it's 0% to the closest percent, but we'll see how he flies out. Josh Johnson.
I'd say about zero now that we have Rush. I think that there's still, I'd say there's a lot less likely of a chance that we draft someone now that we have Cooper Rush, but I don't know, maybe on the practice squad, I could see him if they wanted him to provide value there, but I would just hope you'd go with someone who could provide some more benefit from playing.
I'm at the same point. Right now, they've basically decided on all of these guys so far. Josh Johnson, I think, could be a practice squad quarterback potentially. Depends really what he wants to do with his life. If he wants to hold a clipboard, be around on the practice squad, not be in uniform on game day, but be wearing, you know, Ravens gear. By the way, this is really interesting. Jeremy Lucien told the story on the show that they put out gear for everyone, and the practice squad guys who are on the sideline have their own uniform. It's just different. So they wear, you know, a Ravens sweatshirt or whatever is appropriate, I guess, to the weather. Under the circumstances, but it was an interesting story. But I think Josh Johnson could be a clipboard guy, and could be if he had a special friendship with Lamar, that basically he was a guy who could talk to him the same way T. Martin could, say, then I think there'd be a lot of reason to keep him around. But otherwise, I'm not seeing a lot of reason. Christian Mathieu. Now, he's a defensive back, probably best known from my point of view for the way he beat up Tez Walker in the preseason last year.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're looking for someone to just maybe kick the ass of a receiver with a couple hard hits. Maybe you could argue hits that were a bit too hard to be done in the preseason. He almost kind of reminds me of one of those, the guys in hockey that they call goons who
yes.
can't really play hockey, just comes in to kick someone else's ass or protect your player. Christian Matthews, perfect for that. I don't really see him as an NFL level talent.
Yep. All right. Steven Sims now returns some punts for the Ravens. Nice 15-yard reverse in the playoff game. What do you say? Percentage chance of him returning?
I think to start the season would be very unlikely, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, you could have maybe a 25% chance of during the season, some guys get hurt and you pick him up and he already knows a little bit of the playbook and he proved some value. I liked him, but again, I'm still looking for the Ravens to just get better at those punt returns. And I feel like even, you know, he didn't improve it all that much. He had some weaknesses in his game. So whatever the Ravens need to do, I'm sure they've got people looking at it, but I think they definitely lost some real field position in several games from having that punt game just not be where it was. So I think they're probably just looking for something new.
In this case, in terms of getting a punt returner who can add some value, I do think they're going to be looking for a corner or a wide receiver who has that in his game, maybe a safety also, if you got a free safety who might do it. But I think those are the three positions that you look at and say, okay, I want to make sure this guy can play his primary position first. Is he a guy who can play corner? Is he a guy I want to take a chance on at being a wide receiver down the road? And then you say, okay, now is he in the hunt to be a punt returner also? And you hopefully that works out. But you know, it's got to be a cart leading the horse thing. And horse leading the cart thing. I think the punt return is always the cart to me.
Yeah, I would agree, Ken. And I if I'm Rasheen Ali and I want to make this roster and I'm Keaton Mitchell, I'm thinking Keaton.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Indianapolis Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Mitchell will make the roster, but I'm looking at those two players for someone who can they dedicate a lot of time in the offseason to the punt returning piece and come into camp and, you know, make sure the coaches are on notice that they're ready to return punts, they're wiser, they know what to do, and, you know, you're looking for a spot on the roster. Again, I'm not as concerned with Keaton Mitchell, but especially with Rasheen Ali, hey, you come in and you can show this and hey guys, you're going to want to be carrying four running backs because I'm going to be able to perform this duty. I'm going to be able to play on special teams. I think he could find a lot of value there. And for guys like Ali, you need to make sure you're bringing value when you're at the fringe of the roster. So I'm hoping some of the guys who maybe we'd like to see on the roster can bring some additional skill sets to the table.
You know, you make a good point there. And particularly when you're proposing running backs for a punt return role, the punt and kickoff return roles are very different. So first of all, the kickoff return role as defined in the NFL under the current rule set is a split field responsibility. Okay. So you have two guys back. You're basically always moving forward to find the football. And there's much less of a tracking issue with the football when you're one guy who has to only cover a half field, always coming forward. It's just, it's much easier to get to the right spot, get under the ball, and hopefully to explode out of your stance. But that's one of the things I look for in camp, as I look at which guys are getting under the ball, particularly on punts, and they're there before the ball gets there, and they're not only cleanly catching the ball, but they're exploding out of their stance. So you don't want a guy who's basically drifting back, catching the ball over his shoulder, and disadvantaging himself in terms of his ability to start his return. Most kickoff return people, that's not a problem at all. They get under the ball. They track it fairly well. They've got a little bit of additional responsibility in managing the sideline and trying to get those penalties that put the ball at the 40-yard line. It's not and watching for the goal line and all that stuff. It's not like there's no additional responsibility there relative to the punt. But the punt job is a much more difficult job in terms of getting under the ball, getting to a spot, knowing when to let it go. You know, knowing where you are on the field in terms of making a fair catch or just letting the ball go, all that. I don't think Keaton Mitchell, as fast as he is ever going to be the right guy for the punt return job. And I'll be really interested to see, though, in camp, is he taking reps back there?
Yeah, and look, this is something you can work on in the offseason, Ken. You can study film, watch every punt that was made, and figure out how to get better. I mean, you know, like if you're Tez Walker, right, and you want to start getting a bigger role, I'm not sure if Tez Walker is going to be a good punt returner, right? Yeah. And I'm just a layperson. But what I do know is if you want to catch John Harbaugh's eye, you come in with a lot of study, a lot of practice, and you do the right thing every time in practice, he will notice. So for these guys at the lower end of the depth chart, you want to make sure you're active every week. Come in with a new skill set, right? Even if it's you're the backup punt returner, maybe you're not the number one guy, but you know if the number one guy gets hurt that they're not going to panic that we've got to put Ali back there. You know, you're not going to make a bad decision, right? A punt return is, it's a 90% mental, right? Fielding the right punts, catching it in the right spot, making the right step when a gunner's coming right at you, whereas that kick return is really more of like the Olympic measurables of, you know, getting out there and stuff. And like you said, there's not zero additional responsibility on the kick return, but the punt return is a spot where fumbles can happen easily. And, you know, you really have to have the mental part down. And I believe you can really study for it. So I'm hoping some of these guys have the off-season awareness to try to put the work in.
Yeah. You definitely have to travel a lot further to get the football too, as I think the key things. Let's keep going. Brent Urban, I'm seeing 70% to return. I don't think it's a sure thing. They could sign Calais Campbell. They could be squeezed out. He could be squeezed out by a draft pick possibly. So there are reasons why Urban might not make it. He's an extraordinarily valuable, fungible end of the roster piece, meaning you can have a handshake agreement with him and then bring him back. But I'm at 70% right now for Brent.
I'm about 50-50 on Brent. I think that there's, with an injury, he could certainly be back. And the likelihood that you have an injury on the defensive line is always pretty high, despite the fact that they had that incredible run 2 years ago of the lack of injuries on the defensive line. I like Urban. I think he eats up a lot of space on first down, rundowns. But I think that this is the draft. It's pretty deep. This is probably the draft to get two young players and really fortify. So I would hope the number one option isn't Brent Urban, but it's more of a fallback plan if the draft doesn't fall as you hope it would, or if it falls like you hope it would, and wow, we get this corner, you know, we have to take this corner right over a D tackle. it's good to have him. There's your backup plan. But I'm 50-50. I wouldn't be surprised to see him back mid-season or something to that effect.
Okay. All right, Christian Welch, we talked about him a little bit earlier. I think he's got about a 60% chance. I think Welch loses his job if the Ravens go double dip at the inside linebacker spot during this draft. And with 11 picks, pretty good chance. And even if they don't double dip, they still could get a UDFA they like. And one of the sad facts of Christian Welch career position in his career right now is that he's got to be better than a rookie. He's got to be a lot better than a rookie who has four cheap years. And Welch, we haven't seen any indication that that would necessarily be true. Certainly an inside linebacker, but even on special teams, you know, it hasn't been a consistently active on game day because they needed him on special teams. So I'm at 60%. I think he did win from Borden and Harrison going, but I don't think it's a sure thing.
Yeah, I think he'll be in the league this year. I think he'll have maybe one of the handful of practice squad call-ups that you can have. I'm not sure if he makes a starting roster, the 53 coming out of camp, but I think he'll be back in the league in some way, shape, or form. Whether or not that's with the Ravens, I think when you're at his position in the league, you've got to take whatever team you can jump on with, and whatever game, you know, these game checks are pretty material to someone in his position. You've got to collect as many game checks as you can. But would I be surprised if he's on Seattle's roster and he gets called up three times, then cut from the practice squad, then find his way on New England's roster, then cut, then find his way on our roster? I wouldn't be surprised if he bounces around like that. So I think high likelihood he's in the league with the Ravens. I'm about 50-50 on him.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And the last one is a really intriguing one. Tre'Davious White. I have him at about 50%. I think, though, that with each day he goes unsigned, it's a pretty clear indication that there isn't a contract out there. That nobody was watching the Ravens film last year and said, you know what, Tre'Davious White still has something left in the tank. I think it was all about injuries with the Rams. Let's sign him for 2 years, $10 million. I think it could be a sneaky value signing. Nobody's jumping to do that.
Yeah, I would agree, Ken. I think when the only saving grace is that when you look at the roster, if you're Tre'Davious White, you've got Humphrey, you've got Wiggins, you've got TJ Tampa, and then you have Armour Davis. And then there's a bunch of other, you know, smaller guys that come in and out, but those are the big four. And frankly, I don't really think I'm comfortable putting Armour Davis in any big four, at least not calling it big four. It's probably an insult to the term big four. But I think that he could bring a lot of value to this team. I would be happy to see him back. I do think they need to get younger, and I do think they need to spend one of those premium picks on a corner. I think there will be other veterans sitting out there that they could scoop up, and I think a lot of it is the price point. They're not going to want to spend a lot of money here. So, you know, does someone want to give Tre'Davious White more money? Has he made enough money off that big deal he had in Buffalo where he thinks, you know, I think I can win here in Baltimore? You know, I think that's probably his factor. So I think it might be 30 to 40% that he returns to the Ravens, and would certainly be happy to see him back, but on a very affordable deal. I think something fairly close to the vet minimum, maybe $1.5 million to $1.75 million for the year, but I'm not all that wild on giving him all that much money.
If it was vet minimum with up to 3.5 with incentives, would you be okay?
Yeah, I would be.
Okay. I think that's more likely what he ends up with, because he didn't play all that many snaps last year. So a lot of the playing time incentives he could more easily pick up, and they'd be NLTBE, which means the Ravens can push him off into 26. So that's a good thing.
Right. Will he be far enough from the injury that he starts to get some of his athleticism back? Maybe. I don't know if corners in their very, very late 20s coming off of serious leg injuries, I don't know if there is athleticism to gain, right? If you're 23 right, and you do that, I think you can, but you know, you get to the point where your body starts getting old and creaky, and as a cornerback, late 20s is that time. So,
I'm with you. Ardarius Washington, not a UFA, he's an RFA. The Ravens gave him the original round tender. Since Ardarius was an undrafted free agent, it means they will get no compensation for him if he is signed by another team. However, they do have the right to match any offer, which is really nice. So maybe there's another team out there that will pay Ardarius some significant money. And maybe he re-signs with the Ravens for either $3.41 million or finds somebody else who offers him 3 years, $12 million. And the Ravens say, great. That's all we needed to do was have somebody set the market for us. Here's your contract. But it's a little bit like the Lamar Jackson situation, obviously at a much different level, but you know, other teams did not want to set the market on Lamar Jackson by making him an offer. You know, they would have had to give up a draft pick as well, but they also were basically putting the Ravens in a position to sign Jackson, potentially even at a discount, by getting an offer on the table.
Yeah, very similar to the Lamar deal, and also very dissimilar, right? Depending on the way you're looking at it. The Lamar contract saga that offseason was super interesting because I still go back and wonder, could a team have offered Lamar $250 million guaranteed and $280 all in? Could they have just done more, pushed the Ravens more than they would have been willing to do? And I think a lot of times you're like, oh, well, you got to give up the two first round draft picks and all the guaranteed money.
It was just one, actually.
It was just one. It was just one. And so, you know, again, but some people were saying we can't do that. You know, you and I talk about it, you know, all the time that Lamar provides surplus value to his contract, like serious surplus value. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I think, you know, you could argue very simply that Lamar is very underpaid for what he does. I wonder how many teams are kicking themselves that they didn't try to go bold and say, hey, Lamar, $300 million guaranteed, $380 all in. Maybe it's a big waste of money, but you still got teams throwing $35 million at Sam Darnold or Kirk Cousins. And, you know, is that really a better plan than what you could have given Lamar? But I'm going on a tangent. Of course, I think Ardarius, I like what they did with him. The $3.41 million is much more palatable than the $5.3. I like Ardarius. I want him on the team. He made some really big plays at the end of the year last year, but I'm just not sold on him, his ability to stay healthy. So I think what they did is probably a good medium. And if someone comes in and says, hey, Ardarius, 3 years, $15.5 million, I think the Ravens pass and try to find another safety.
They might. Even 3 years, $15.5 million, like you mentioned, it is going to be cheaper for the Ravens because that'll somehow be, it probably will not be a front-loaded contract. It might be because teams that have money to spend right now can put a poison pill for the Ravens right in that contract and basically have a bunch of front-loaded money in there. But if they set the contract up in a typical sloped way and they offer 3 years, $15.5 million, I think that might be a better deal for the Ravens than $5.35 million for 1 year only. Because Ardarius is still a youngish player. You know, your second 2 years basically going to be more expensive just because of cap growth. I think that it might be okay. Don't know if the Ravens would do it. I think they might pass. There's a number they'll pass out. $18 million, I think they pass. But I'm not sure that $15 million they pass. So it'd be interesting for a 3 year deal where their pain point is. All right. Let's get into the last part, which we planned for today, which was to come up with two moves each of us would like to see happen specifically with the Ravens, where they are roster-wise. And I think we'd pretty much agree that in terms of for the draft, the Ravens have set themselves up in a pretty good position. One of the things being that by signing Ronnie Stanley, they eliminated one of their really obvious big needs. And now it looks like they have a lot of medium needs. You know, they could get a corner, they could get an edge, they could get an inside linebacker maybe to fill the thing. They certainly need a safety. They've got another offensive lineman at guard would be, you know, a good depth signing, or maybe even a guy who could start in 2025. But maybe you go first. Tell us what's one move you would like to see the Ravens make the rest of this offseason.
Yeah, okay. So Ken, completely agree with what you just said. I think that the Ravens have really set themselves up well. And I think that leaves them the ability to draft truly whatever talent they think falls to them. But as it comes to two moves that I'd like to see, the first one is they've got to figure out what to do with the tight end position. There is a lot of resource sunk into that position. They play at a very high level. They've got all three contracts up after this year. I don't know if they necessarily need to have a move figured out in the next day or two that we're aware of, but I think they really need to have a plan, whether it's a trade lined up for Andrews, a trade lined up for Likely, the assumption that, hey, we're going to use the franchise tag on Likely if at the end of this year. I agree with you that there's kind of a time value of money component with the comp picks. You know, they're not immediate. They are deferred, which reduces their value for sure. But
they would really do well by themselves to get that plan in place. And I'm sure they have the plan in place, but we may not figure it out just yet. But I'm hoping that coming out of the draft, you know, coming out of that weekend, that we have a much clearer picture of what they're looking to do here.
All right. With you on that, of course. And since we talked about it earlier, I don't think we need to go any deeper into that, but I really would like them to be able to draft a tight end this year. Also, a guy who was hurt the entire year last year, but I think still has some potential value, is Kadir Ishmael. And he's kind of the forgotten man because he was injured more or less the whole year. Quarterback at Villanova, came in as a wide receiver initially with the Ravens. He's a very big guy. Then he started beating the crap out of David Ajabo and some of the other the edge players during camp practice. Really got noticed, I think, there seemed to be an ongoing rivalry between him and the edge players. If you can get the edge players of the Baltimore Ravens to give you that kind of attention, and Adafe Owe is taking the time to teabag you after he knocks you out of the ground once, you know you did something right. So he's a guy I think still potentially has value, probably starts the year on the practice squad, probably comes to camp, although I'm not sure what his injury situation is. And I think the Ravens would do well to have the ability to bring in a draft pick or even a UDFA, but they've been poached recently, most recently with Travis Vokolek getting taken. If you go back a little further, they couldn't find a way to keep Waller around. You know, great athlete, but a guy who you know, they just didn't have enough tight end slots for him. And it probably also had some concerns about him and his behavior and whatnot. But an additional spot at tight end would really help the Ravens. The one counter argument I would give to that is that the Ravens are really using the tight end position to get additional receiving snaps that might normally go to a wide receiver on another team. And so you need to have more depth at that position. And when you need more depth, you also need more fresh legs. And so having two guys is good. It's just, I can't justify it for 138 total targets, even when those 138 total targets over the last 2 years combined have produced a passer rating over 143.
Yeah, that's incredible. Do you think Kadir Ishmael can get to the point where he truly has a tight end body? I mean, going from quarterback to receiver to tight end, I'm hoping he's put in a lot of work to just get a couple more pounds on, maybe 10 or 12 pounds, and still be able to move. You know, if that's the case, you could see him really start to get noticed more in practice. And if he was getting attention from the Ravens defense last year, you know, another 10 or 12 pounds of bulk and meat would probably allow him to stand out in the preseason, and it might force the issue for the Ravens that someone might be looking at him if they're not going to sign him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Kadir is also the kind of player, even though he has atypical size for a special teams player, might be a guy you could find a spot there for. Usually you can. You can find your space for tight ends on your special teams units. He's not like a Tommy Streeter kind of awkwardly tall. Or a Jaleel Scott, say. He's a really athletic kind of tall, so it bodes well. All right, anyway, I like your first selection. Let me move on. I think they need to sign a veteran outside cornerback. I don't think the Ravens need to focus on fixing the slot because they have three guys. They're three hyper-versatile players, all of whom slot is one of their potential responsibilities, and Humphrey, Hamilton, and Washington. So I don't think you address the slot. I think you go at outside corner where you have the potential to be shorthanded at some point during the season. And I'm worried about the number three spot, and I'm worried about the number four spot. I feel a lot better about it if Tampa is not the guaranteed number three, but it can compete for the number three with another guy. I'd love to see Tampa get some snaps. Like second year, be terrific if he got 200 snaps this year or a little bit more. But that also might not work out. And if it doesn't, then you need to have a veteran who's ready to step in and play. And the Ravens have done this in the past large number of times, picking up players like Josh Wilson and whatnot. Who's the guy that had the two interceptions against in the Mile High Miracle game? I'm drawing a blank on him.
Corey Graham.
Yeah. They picked up guys from other organizations who are underutilized and found a way to have them available for either slot or outside duty. I think that Tre'Davious White would make a lot of sense as that guy. He might come at the right price, but whoever they get, rotation outside corner is the key, and let the slot position take care of itself among the combination of versatile players they have for it.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the slot. Like you said, the Ravens can fill that role. You really need someone with the appropriate size and ability to play on the outside. I would like to see Tampa get in the game and get to the point where maybe we feel comfortable that he could move into a starting role next year or year four. So that would be great. But, you know, I do think that they need one more vet there. I think Stephon Gilmore might still be available. Last I checked, it probably would be a lot more expensive than Tre'Davious White, for example. But I do think getting a little skill and experience there would probably really help the team.
Armour Davis entering year four, are you okay with him being the fifth corner, or do you see really no reason why that should happen if they were to re-sign White, who I personally prefer over JD? I don't want to give you the answer, but and also I expect them to draft a corner. I think they already have their five guys.
Yeah, I am hoping that JAD is gone. I don't think that he's a 53-man roster player. I think he's probably in the, you know, 53 to 65 range, whereas as guys start dropping like flies during the year, he certainly has a spot on the roster, but he just seems more like a practice squad player to me who can come up midseason. I would be pretty disappointed if he was on the starting roster. I don't like the injury risk. He seems like he's always got a different injury, and I think that we need to get younger. And, you know, if you can find a good veteran to come in on an affordable deal, great. But you need to draft one and maybe two corners here.
Yeah, with you, I mean, I think he duplicates a lot of what Brandon Stevens's weaknesses are. And just anytime he looks back for the football, the receiver is gone. If he doesn't look back for the football, which is usually the case, he can stay with them, but it does not do very much to impede the football from getting to the receiver.
Yeah, I don't know who the coaches were trying to fake out in the training camp this past year with all the JAD chatter. You know, you would have thought that, you know, Muhammad Ali came back from the grave, but it was still JAD, and you know, he had a lot of playing time, I think, in that Cleveland game, that the dreadful Cleveland game. And you know, I just don't see it again. I'm not a trained scout, but I don't see what they're seeing. And I think now's the time with the draft picks to, you know, maybe spend a second on a corner and then maybe spend a sixth on a corner and start getting that room refreshed a little bit.
There was buy-in from some of the Ravens media, and some of it was really surprising in terms of the buy-in on JED. Now, there's kind of two categories of reporters who are willing to look at things differently, or two categories of media attached to the Ravens who are willing to do stuff. So there's the media who are really, they are professional reporters and aggregators almost for the team. And those guys, oftentimes Jeff Zriebeck is among them. It's not like Jeff Zriebeck doesn't have any ability to analyze the game. He does, but it's he does more of a job of reporting what is said and then trying to put some light interpretive elements on top of that than he does really otherwise trying to be an analyst of the game and do his own first principles film work and that sort of stuff. That's not his game. But the position that puts him in is that the Ravens have a special relationship with him. And if Harbaugh, for example, doesn't get answered a question he expects to have answered or he expects to get asked, then he'll pull Jeff Zriebeck aside and tell him about it. Like unsolicited. I've seen it happen. It's his relationship with the Ravens is very special. Luke Jones is probably similar. You've got other guys. I don't want to name every name and kind of classify them as one or the other. And then you've got some guys who are analysts, and some of them have a background in playing the game or they've had a long time as an analyst, or they've worked in the case of Vinny Serrato, he's worked in a front office before. And they bought in to a lot of them bought in to the talk on JAD, and they watched it. And I mean, I'm watching the same thing. I can't believe the conclusion being made that JAD is really playing at a super high level in camp. I still see a guy who cannot find the football. And it's so basic to what you're doing. Then if Tre'Davious White come in for one game with the Ravens, that Steelers game, finds the ball in the end zone twice, all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, is a cornerback allowed to do that? Are they allowed to, you know, anticipate where the ball's going, get up there to the catch point, knock it away? You know, it's very surprising. Anyway, I think a lot of the Ravens local coverage community kind of got drawn in to the JAD BS this last camp in a way that I was not particularly happy with.
Yeah, I had heard a lot of people reporting positive things and was listening to your training camp updates. And I was like, wow, this is this is kind of polar opposite in some regards. And I would think back to, well, I've seen JAD play, and I was like, I'm going to trust Ken on this one. You know, I was like, we've seen the output here.
All right, so we're down to, let's see, you got one more to do, right?
Yes. So kind of interesting, Ken, as we go through this, the offense could be bringing back every single starter minus McCary, right? So there's just so much from an offensive standpoint that the continuity, like there's so much continuity there that I think they're in a really good spot. That offense really knows how to score, and we've seen it that they're really good. Maybe just make a mistake less or two when it counts, but other than that, they're good. My next suggestion is on the defensive side, and I think that they really need to get the edge rusher position filled a little bit more, whether that's getting a vet that is cheap after the draft, that doesn't cost a comp pick, that rolls into the Jadeveon Clowney, Pernell McPhee, Justin Houston, Kyle Van Noy. There's probably some I'm forgetting, but they really seem to be able to plug in these veteran edge rushers. Along with the Travis Jones, Matabike, what was formerly Michael Pierce, that interior push, those guys really do well on the outside. So I think that if they don't fill the spot with a draft pick, I do think that getting one of those edge rushers for an affordable price would be really welcome. I think someone like Za'Darius Smith is out there. I don't know if he's burned the bridge completely with the contract snafu, but I think that there's definitely guys out there where you can find value, and that would like to see the room built out a little bit more. I'm kind of anticipating David Ojabo getting cut. I'm not trying to be too negative on a player, but I think maybe that injury just sapped a lot of his explosion, and was hoping to see just some sign of it. And I haven't seen it. So, I think that he may be more of a likely cut than some people realize. And, you bring in someone who's savvy like Za'Darius, I think if Kyle Van Noy can get 10 plus sacks, I don't see why Za'Darius couldn't put up 5 to 10 sacks either, depending on playing time.
Yeah, I mean, they've done very, very well with that bargain group. They have incredible patience waiting for the players to become available. Kyle Van Noy, it was about money when they didn't sign him during the offseason. He didn't join the Ravens in 2023 till what, about week 5 or 6? Because he thought he was worth more. He was trying to hold out, and the Ravens finally signed him for vet minimum plus maybe some incentives, or maybe it was even just a vet minimum in that year. But they have a remarkable connection to the market and what people want to pay, where the other teams that they're competing with in terms of that. And a lot of the teams they are competing with, they're the savvy teams that are dealing with limited cap space, maybe a Buffalo, Kansas City, some of the other teams that are they know, yeah, they could use an additional edge rusher, but they also need to be real careful with the cap dollars they spend. So they're not looking to sign somebody for, $8 million a year or something. They need to get somebody cheaper than that. But the Ravens have consistently found value there. And I think the stuff that I hear about not being able to win in the playoffs without having guys who are automatic one-on-one. Well, first of all, there are no automatic one-on-one winners, but win a real high percentage of the time on the edge. I think it's really misguided. I think, you look at teams that have good edges. Sure, they've done well, but you look at teams that have some pretty okay edges, and they've done well as well. You've got to figure out where you're not going to be great and where you're not going to spend money. It's the hardest thing a GM has to do. Not where he's going to spend the money, where he's not going to spend the money. And the Ravens have found a value on the margin with those edge rushers. So I'm with you entirely in terms of wanting to get that, have that be a source. I also think they need to draft one. And I think they need to draft a guy who has high upside.
Yeah, I think that if I'm an edge rusher and I'm looking at how much longer do I have in the league, if I'm looking to put up a good year, coming to Baltimore is a place to come. And I think that on the flip side, I think that some of the edge rushers in Baltimore are a little overrated from a pure stats perspective, right? Yep. Maybe a couple of nerds like us wouldn't over or underrate them. But, when you see Owe and Van Noy putting up 10 sacks, would they be doing that if you just placed them on another team? I really don't think that's the case. I think that the Ravens have a super special interior of Matabike, Travis Jones, and I love Michael Pierce. I'll still keep talking about him. I hope he's coming back, but I know that's not true. And then they have Lamar, and I feel like that the D tackles and Lamar are the true force multipliers. I know there's some other great players, obviously Kyle Hamilton, but If I see Matabike and Travis Jones in the middle and I see Owe and Van Noy across from me, I'm thinking I'm going to be able to come in here and put up a good enough season that I'm at least going to get another look in the league.
And then there's some people going to ask, why is Lamar a force multiplier for the defense? It's pretty simple, actually. Lamar gives the defense leads to work with. And when they have leads to work with, you can tee off as a pass rusher and you can build your plan around how you're going to get after the quarterback. The quarterback's run threat is much less when you have a big lead. So anyway, lots of reasons why Lamar helps all 22 people and not just the 11 on offense. I'll go with the fourth thing I would like to see, or the second of my two, is the Ravens to sign a veteran safety with at least split field ability and supplement that with a draft pick as well. I think they need both, not just one. I think they're not looking for a special teams player specifically. I think they're looking for a true split field guy, a Geno Stone type, somebody who can play the back end well, has good instincts playing the back end, breaks on the football, helps them create some more turnovers. Obviously, they had a disastrous situation there for 10 weeks this last year with Jackson and Williams. Hopefully, they get it fixed and they find another non-Eddie Jackson signing that's at a similar price, however, and can handle that split field role. It's a very limited role, honestly. I know free safety, ball skills, and really good instincts on the back end are not that common, but it is something, if you're specifically looking for that, ought to come cheap. And I think, again, you supplement that with a true ball hawking free safety in the draft, and then you have the ability to play Hamilton and potentially Washington wherever you want.
Yeah, I'd like to see this as well. I think the Ravens really need to do some self-scouting around what has worked in prior years at this position and what really didn't work this past year, so they don't get themselves into that pickle. I mean, they lost a lot of games in part, and almost lost the two Bengals games in part of having such a poor safety tandem, you know, Kyle Hamilton obviously excluded. So I don't think this is the hardest position to fill. I do know that, you know, you and I on the show, we've looked through a lot of different safety candidates, and a lot of the safety candidates, they've given up really high yards per target. So mm-hmm. The Ravens need to figure out what is going to work in our defense. How is Zach Orr going to use them and make sure that we don't have this mess that we have last year. The Ravens were fortunate enough that they were able to play really well at the end of the year, and they did really well against Pittsburgh. And frankly, you know, like we said, a couple of mistakes change here or there. You know, they could have been in the Super Bowl, but they still blew some games early to a Cleveland team that they shouldn't have. They got chewed up by Las Vegas. You always say Oakland, I do too. So, but you know, do you remember the second half of that game with their Brock Bowers, the tight end,
Devontae Adams.
And then Devontae Adams. Yep. I mean, it was sorry, right? So we can lose games and still get where we need to be, but the AFC is super competitive, and that might mean we're a third seed. And we don't want to be going up to the frozen tundra of Buffalo. We don't want to be going into Kansas City. We also don't want to be eclipsed by someone in our division because we just dropped too many. So, you know, these games matter, and they've really got to scout themselves here and say, okay, we've only got, you know, $2 million to spend. Who's going to fit what we're going to do and stick to the system and play how we need them?
Yep. Yeah, well said. All right, Matt, always a pleasure talking football with you. Thanks again for coming on and doing this. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
All right, you can find me at KidRock20 on Twitter. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
All right. Other folks out there, if you want to be on a film study short, great time of year to do it. We're starting draft content. I've begun the very arduous process of going through and trying to rank my players by position. That content will start to come out at the end of next week. In fact, the first show will be the 27th, I believe it is, that I'm actually recording it. So shortly after that, the first shows on the top 10 draft candidates by position will come out. We hope also you'll join us on for some of the 3 days of the draft. It is the best watch party you can have, and really something that we would love to have you for. It's an opportunity to interact. Sometimes there's even an opportunity to come on and ask your question directly on the feed, which will be streaming live. Anyway, I hope you'll join us on that. For Matt Ruff, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM. Thank you.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Indianapolis Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling Essential Prenatal Multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.